What did Della wear, boys? What did Della wear? I ask you now as a personal friend, what did Della wear?
She wore her New Jersey, boys, she wore her New Jersey. I tell you now as a personal friend, she wore her New Jersey.
What did Idaho, boys? What did Idaho? I ask you now as a personal friend, what did Idaho?
She honed her Maryland, boys, she honed her Maryland.
Tell
you now as a personal friend, she hold her Maryland.
What did I away, boys? What did I away? I ask you now as a personal friend, what did I away?
She weighed a Washington, boys, she weighed a Washington. I tell you now as a personal friend, she weighed a Washington.
How did Wisconsin, boys? How did Wisconsin? I ask you now as a personal friend.
You're joining Library on the Go. We bring stories and adventures to you. I'm Ms. Laura.
And I'm Ms. Barbara.
Of the Cortez Public Library. Ms. Barbara was just laughing at Iowa because that's where she's from.
Long time ago.
I don't know what a Washington is, but it's probably
it's quite a bunch.
It's a bunch. Okay, Ms. Barbara.
The first story today is Jamela's Dress, Story and Pictures by Nikki Daly. Published by Farrar, Strauss, and Giroux. Mama was very pleased with the new material she found at Menandy's. She had worked hard to earn the money for it. "It's beautiful, Mama," said Jamela, stroking the crisp new material. "Yes, it's beautiful, and it cost a lot of money, but I need something special to wear for Thelma's wedding," said Mama. Jamela helped Mama wash the stiffness out of the new material, and together they hung it up to dry. "I'll look after it, Mama," said Jamela. "Thank you," said Mama. "Just make sure Taxi doesn't jump up and dirty my material." "Okay," said Jamela. A warm breeze blew, and Jamela rubbed her cheek against the soft material and followed the beautiful patterns with her finger. When Taxi barked, Mama called, "Jamela, are you looking after my material?" "Yes, Mama, it's getting nice and dry," said Jamela. Dreamily, Jamela swayed between the folds of the materials as they flapped and wrapped around her into a dress. When Mama heard nothing going on, she called, "Are you looking after my material, Jamela?" There was no answer. Down the road went Jamela, proud as a peacock, to show Thelma her beautiful dress for the wedding. She passed Miss Stiles' hairdressers and the snack pack grocery. "Hi, beautiful," called old Greasy Hands, who was fixing up Thelma's wedding car. Children sang, "Coella Jamela, African Queen." Taxi barked, and Miss Ziba's chicken went wild. Then a boy on a bicycle, who wasn't looking where he was going, went skidding all over Mama's dress material. What a show! In his photo studio, Archie heard the commotion. He ran out, clutching his special camera, and shouted, "Hold it, Jamela!" So Jamela posed. The children pushed in. Taxi pushed in. Miss Ziba and her chicken pushed in. And the boy on the bicycle just squeezed in, and they all smiled. Click! But when Thelma saw Jamela, she scolded, "Hi, Jamela, your mama's going to be very upset when she sees what you've done with her material." And Mama was. Mama was so upset that she couldn't even look at Jamela. She just looked at the dirty, torn material and said sadly, "What am I going to wear for the wedding?" Everyone felt sorry for Mama and cross with Jamela. Even Jamela was cross with Jamela. She hadn't meant to ruin Mama's material. It just happened. A few days later, Archie saw Jamela coming down the road without her usual smile. He called, "Hey, Jamela, why so sad? Come see the good news." And pointing to the front page photograph in the newspaper, Charlie read proudly, "Coella Jamela, African Queen, a prize-winning photograph taken by Archie Kumalo." But instead of looking happy, Jamela started to cry, and she told Archie all about Mama's messed up material. "That's a sad, sad story, Jamela," said Archie, "but it has a happy ending," and he put his hand into a bag. Jamila wiped her eyes. "See," said Archie, taking out a bundle of money. "I won big bucks for that photograph." Jamila had never seen so much money. "You can buy lots of things at the shops with that money, Archie," said Jamila. "Right," Archie laughed. "That's the happy ending." In the afternoon, Archie arrived carrying a gift for Jamela's mama. "What is it, Archie?" Mama asked in surprise. "Open it, Mama, open it," cried Jamila. Mama unwrapped the parcel inside. It was a beautiful piece of material from Menandy's, just like the first piece. Jamila jumped up and down. "Oh, thank you, Archie," said Mama. "No, you must thank Kuella Jamila, African Queen," said Archie, holding up his prize-winning photograph. And when Mama saw it, she gave Jamila a big hug. After Archie had gone, Jamila helped Mama wash the material and hang it up to dry. "It's the most beautiful material in the world," said Jamila. Mama just smiled. They sang songs as they watched the feathery patterns dance in the warm breeze. Then Mama and Jamila played a hand-clapping game for a while. "Let's do teapots, Mama," said Jamila. So Jamila taught Mama to do a little song about a teapot with a spout. They dipped and tipped, and the tea poured out. When they stopped, the material felt warm and dry, so Mama showed Jamila how to fold it, just as she had learned to do it when she was a little girl. That evening, Mama cut and sewed until she had her special dress to wear to Thelma's wedding, and when she finished, there was a piece of material left over. Mama measured it with her eye, this way and that way. Then she looked at sleeping Jamila and smiled. The hands of the clock passed midnight, and Mama still worked hard. Every now and then she sang softly to herself, "Kuella Jamila, African Queen." Next day at the wedding, Thelma looked radiant. Mama looked lovely. And when Archie said, "Smile, everyone," guess who had the biggest smile? Kuella Jamila, African Queen. That's who. The end.
It's a wonderful story, and those African materials are just so gorgeous. They're bright and beautiful. Okay, you're joining us on KSJD, Dryland Community Radio, 90.5 and 91.5 FM, and you were listening to "What Did Della Wear" at the beginning, and I kind of thought they sounded like Alvin and the Chipmunks a little bit.
I don't think it was, but it did sound that way a little.
No offense to the group singing this, which, I'm sorry, I don't know their names. I think it's a British group.
Okay, our next story is called "Beats Me, Claude," a story by Joan Lowry Nixon, pictures by Tracy Campbell Pearson, published by Viking Kestrel. Shirley and Claude stood in the narrow doorway of their cabin in that great state called Texas. The hills below them rolled like soft green waves into the distance, and the morning sky was puffed with cotton-white clouds. "Shirley," Claude said, "this sure does seem to be the peaceful place we was looking for." Shirley gave a sigh. "Maybe too peaceful," she said. "Sometimes I hanker for someone else to talk to. Why, sometimes my mouth gets so set on talking to someone that I talk to that ugly old moose head hanging on the wall." "You're not the only one whose mouth's set on for something," Claude said. "Lately my mouth's been set for an apple pie like my mama used to make, all bubbly and spicy and oozing out of the crust." "That's so," Shirley said. "Well, then I reckon I'll make you an apple pie for your noon meal, Claude." So while Claude was out in the fields, Shirley tied on her apron and pulled a sack of apples out of the root cellar. Shirley never was a very good cook, so she chunked some lard into a bowl, poured in some water, dumped in enough flour to make it stick together. She slammed it on the table and stuffed half in the bottom of her iron skillet. She put in some sliced apples, then covered them with the other half of the dough. She put a lid on the whole thing and set it in the fireplace. "Seems I'm forgetting something," Shirley said, "but I can't think of what." She had no sooner cleaned up the kitchen than she heard a knock at the door. She opened it to find a sour-faced man wearing a black suit who was gripping the shoulder of a boy about 10 years of age. "I'm a preacher," said the man, "and I'm trying to find the road to Austin where I can take this poor, unfortunate orphan to be cared for." "I'll show you," Shirley said, "but have something to eat first." As soon as the man had left to wash up, the boy said, "I'm Tom. I'm a real orphan, but he's not a real preacher. He left my sister with a woman in town. She paid him $20 so my sister could stay there and scrub the floor and wash pots. And he's going to sell me, too." The man came back and sat at the table under the moose head. "You said you had something to eat?" The lid of the iron skillet was rising and wobbling. Shirley guessed the pie must be about done. She put the skillet on the table in front of the man. He leaned forward to take off the lid. "Hold it," Shirley said. She picked up her rifle. "A real preacher would turn a few words of thanks afore starting to eat. Be on your way. Tom stays here." The man angrily slammed his fists on the table, and with a loud swoosh, the pie exploded, splattering apples and dough all over him. He yelled something awful. "Dang," Shirley said. "Now I recollect. I was supposed to cut slits in the crust so the steam could get out." And being tender-hearted, she dumped a bucket of water over the man to cool him down. He jumped up so fast, one foot stuck tight in the bucket. He scrambled out the door, climbed on his horse, and galloped past Claude, who had just stepped into the clearing. Claude thought on it a moment. "Any reason why that feller's riding around yelling with his foot in a bucket?" "He got a mite upset when my apple pie blew up," Shirley said. "Any reason why you can't make a regular bubbly, spicy, oozy apple pie like other folks?" Clyde asked. Shirley shrugged. "Beats me, Claude," she said. Shirley explained about Tom while they ate their new meal, but Claude said no way to have peace and quiet with a 10-year-old boy in the house. "You can take him back to town tomorrow, Shirley." As he strode to the door, Claude added, "I'm really hankering for an apple pie, Shirley. I hope you try fixing one again." Shirley never was a very good cook. So she chunked some lard into a bowl, poured in some water, and dumped in enough flour to make it stick together. She slammed it all on the table and stuffed half into the iron skillet. She put in some sliced apples, then covered them with the other half of the dough. This time she cut slits in the crust before she put on the lid and set the skillet in the fireplace. "Seems like I'm forgetting something again," Shirley said, "but I can't think of what." Meanwhile, Tom had cleaned up the kitchen and was sweeping the floor. "I'm mighty beholden to you, Tom," she said. "I always done chores at home," Tom said. "Afore Mama got sick, she even learned us to cook." Well, Shirley got out some sweet milk and some sorry-looking ginger cookies and sat down to hear Tom's story. He had just finished the telling, and Shirley was wiping away a tear when the door burst open and a man with a black kerchief around his neck stomped in. He waved a gun at Shirley and Tom, dropped a bank sack on the table, and sat down under the moose head. "This seems as good a place as any to hold up while the sheriff's looking for me," he said. "What's in the skillet?" "Apple pie," Shirley said. "Bring it over here," the bank robber said. So Shirley put the skillet on the table in front of him, and very carefully she took off the lid. "Don't smell too good," he said, "but apple pie's apple pie," and he dug in with his fork and stuffed a piece into his mouth. Then he jumped to his feet, yelling, "That's no apple pie," and he shot his gun at the skillet. The bullet bounced off the bottom crust and got the old moose head right between the eyes. The moose head dropped straight down on the head of the bank robber and stuck tight. "Dang," Shirley said, "now I recollect. I was supposed to put sweetening in the pie." She grabbed the man's gun and shoved him into the chair. Then she fired a shot out the window, hoping to attract attention. It wasn't long before the sheriff poked his head in the door. "Got your man," Shirley said. "Good for you, Shirley," the sheriff said. "There's a $50 reward on this fella. Next time you're in town, you can collect." "I'll be there," Shirley said. "By the way, you can keep that moose head on him till you get to town. I don't want it back." The sheriff and the robber rode past Claude as he stepped into the clearing. Claude thought about it for a moment, then he came into the cabin. Any reason why the sheriff's arresting a moose? He shot my apple pie, Shirley said. Claude put a finger in the pie and tasted it. Think he done it a favor, he said. Any reason why you can't make a regular bubbly, spicy, oozy apple pie like other folks? Shirley shrugged. Beats me, Claude, she said. Claude, Shirley said before Claude headed back outside, let's talk about keeping Tom. Nope, Claude said. It's noisy enough around here. Back he goes to town tomorrow, and he walked to the door. Shirley, you just don't know how I've been hankering for apple pie. Think you could get another one baked afore supper? I reckon so, Shirley said. Now, Shirley never was a very good cook, so she chunked some lard into a bowl, poured in some water, and dumped in enough flour to make it stick together. She slammed it on the table and stuffed half into her skillet. This time she threw in a couple of handfuls of sugar, poured in a slurp of honey and a lot of molasses. She covered it with dough, cut slits in the crust, put a lid on the skillet, and set it in the fireplace. Seems like I'm forgetting something again, Shirley said, but I can't think of what. Tom said, meaning no disrespect, but you don't make apple pie the way my mama learned me, all bubbly, spicy, and oozy. Shirley's pie began bubbling and oozing all over the fireplace. Maybe I could make another, Tom said polite-like, just in case. And he set to work fashioning a little oven out of a piece of tin and some bricks. And just as Tom put his apple pie in the oven, Shirley heard horses. And moments later, the door nearly slammed off its hinges. Three men in ragged uniforms raced in. Don't move, the first man yelled. The second swept off his tattered army hat and bowed. We'll soon be out of your way, ma'am. We just need to stay under cover for a while. I think they're running away from the U.S. Army, Tom whispered to Shirley. The third man had his eyes on the skillet. What's in that pan? He asked. Apple pie, Shirley said. I'd sure like some of that pie, he said, and the three men sat down. Shirley carried the skillet and three forks to the table. She edged slowly toward her rifle. The men waved dripping chunks of pie in the air to cool them, then stuck them into their mouths. The first man grabbed his throat. The second man bent over double, and the third man shouted, "We've been poisoned!" "Dang," Shirley said. "Now I recollect. I was supposed to put in the apples." And she pointed her rifle at them. "Hold it right there," she said. "Any man who moves is going to find himself eating that whole pie." None of them moved. Tom took their guns while Shirley fired out the window, hoping to attract attention. It didn't take long for a U.S. Army patrol to arrive, and in only a few moments the prisoners were being led away to the sound of the Army bugle. The patrol leader saluted Claude as they passed him at the edge of the clearing. Claude thought on it a moment, then he came into the cabin. Shirley, any reason why the U.S. Army's parading through our property? They was after some prisoners who got done in by my apple pie, Shirley said. Claude put a finger into the pie and then put it into his mouth, and he made a terrible face. Before he could complain, Shirley said, just smell the apple pie Tom is a-making. From Tom's oven were coming all the bubbly, spicy, oozy, cinnamon sugar smells an apple pie ought to make. Claude watched Tom take the pie from the oven and place it all golden and buttery on the table. Shirley cut a great slab of pie and laid it in front of Claude. He raised a bite on his fork and then slowly put it in his mouth. As he chewed, he smiled, and tears came to his eyes. It's even better than my mama's pie, he said. If Tom lived here, he could make you an apple pie like that every time you hankered for one, Shirley said. Claude beamed at Tom. Sit down, son. Let's talk about the two of us building on an extra room at the side of the house. Claude, Shirley said, Tom and I need to go into town tomorrow and pick up some things he left behind. What things? Claude asked. Shirley cut Claude another piece of pie. Oh, just some clothes, some books, and a sister. Fine by me, Claude said, his mind on the pie. Shirley, is there any reason why you could never learn to make a pie like this? Shirley's smile was so bright it lit up half the cabin. "Beats me, Claude," she said. The end.
Shirley.
Shirley, who cannot cook.
I was really hoping that the brother and sister would reunite, so that was a nice ending.
Yes, it was.
Oh, okay, you're joining Library on the Go. We bring stories and adventures to you, and we're on KSJD, Dryland Community Radio, 90.5 and 91.5 FM. And one more story.
I guess today is Apple Pie Day, because this is Bones and the Apple Pie Mystery by David A. Adler, illustrated by Barbara Johansson Newman, published by Penguin Young Readers. "We'll surprise Sally," Grandpa said, "and maybe she'll surprise us." Sally is Grandpa's friend. Every year she tries to win the best pie contest at the county fair. "She doesn't have a car," Grandpa said. "We'll drive her to the fair." Sally had a pie-baking trick. Grandpa said she bakes two pies. She puts one in the oven. A few minutes later, she puts the second one in. When the first one gets too crisp, the second one is just right. Grandpa smiled. "And what do you think she'll do with the crispy pie?" I shook my head. I didn't know. "I think she'll let us eat the crispy pie," Grandpa said. Grandpa showed me his favorite fork. It said Max on the handle. That's Grandpa's name. Grandpa brought his fork, and I brought my detective bag. I'm a famous detective. I'm Detective Jeffrey Bones. I find clues. I solve mysteries. Grandpa knocked on Sally's door, and we waited. Then Sally opened the door, and a large dog was with her. The dog barked and jumped on Grandma. "Get down, Oliver," Sally shouted. "Get down." Oliver got down. "Sit," Sally told Oliver. Oliver sat. "Busy Beth is here," Sally said. "She's my sister, and Oliver is her dog." Grandpa said, "That's nice, but we didn't come to see Busy Beth or Oliver. We came to help you bake apple pies." Sally laughed. "You don't know Beth," she said. "Beth helped me make the dough. She put the dough in pans, cut the apples, filled the pies, put them in the oven. She cleaned the kitchen and washed and ironed the aprons and tablecloths and towels." Grandpa said, "I'm tired just listening to all that." I said, "Now I know why you call her Busy Beth." "Beth kept me so busy I didn't watch the pies," Sally told us. "The crust on the first pie is much too crisp. Would you help me eat it?" "Sure," Grandpa said. "I love crisp crusts." Grandpa took out his Max fork. "Come with me," Sally said. "The pies are on the kitchen table." We followed Sally into the kitchen. The table was there, but the pies were gone. "Are you sure you baked them today?" Grandpa asked. "Of course I'm sure," Sally said. I was sure, too. I have a nose for clues, and I could smell apple pie. I had an idea. "Maybe you left them in the oven," I said. "No," Sally told me. "I left them on the table," and just to be sure, Grandpa opened the oven. "You're right," Grandpa said. "The pies are not in here." "Of course I'm right," Sally told him. "Ruff, ruff." Oliver ran into the kitchen and jumped onto Grandpa. Grandpa fell onto a chair. "Ruff, ruff." Oliver licked Grandpa's shirt. "Everyone likes Grandpa, even dogs. And I know what Grandpa likes. Grandpa likes apple pie." Where were Sally's pies? I looked under the table. I looked on the counter. I looked in the refrigerator, in the freezer, and in the dish cabinet. Then I looked at Oliver. Oliver looked at me. "Ruff, ruff." "That's it," I said. "I know what happened to the apple pies. Oliver ate them." I took out my detective glass out of my bag, and I'm looking for pie crumbs, I said. Grandpa held Oliver. "Dogs are messy eaters." I looked for crumbs in Oliver's doggy hairs, but I didn't find any. "Oliver didn't eat the pies," I said. "Of course he didn't," Sally told me. "If he did, the pans would still be here." "Where's Busy Beth?" Grandpa asked. "She might know what happened to the pies." "I'm a detective. I'll find Busy Beth," I said. I looked in the hall. I looked through my glass, but I didn't find Busy Beth. Grandpa, Sally, and Oliver followed me. "Ruff, ruff." "Be quiet," Sally told Oliver. I looked in the bathroom and dining room. Then I looked in the den. Busy Beth was on the couch, and she was sleeping. "Busy Beth keeps busy," Sally said. "Then she gets tired." "Let's wake her and ask her about the pies," Grandpa said. "Oh, don't wake Pat, Beth," I said. "I'm a detective. I'll find the pies." "Please hurry," Grandpa said, waving his Max fork. "I'm hungry." Beth's things were in the den. Near the couch was a small suitcase. On the table were a purse and a ring of keys. "Ruff, ruff!" I looked at the keys, and I looked at Oliver, and right then I knew where to find the apple pies. "What would you do," I asked, "if you had a big dog and two apple pies?" Grandpa and Sally shook their heads. They didn't know. "Look," I said, and pointed to the keys. "Those are not in Beth's purse because she just used them." "Ruff, ruff!" Oliver's ruff, ruff woke Busy Beth. She rubbed her eyes. "Hey," she said, "why are you watching me sleep?" Sally told her, "We're looking for the pies." "Oh," Beth said, "I'll tell you where they are." "Please let me tell," I said. "You put them in your car." "Yes," Beth said. "You didn't want Oliver to eat them." "Yes," Beth said. "I have dog food and biscuits for Oliver. The pies aren't for him. Sally wants to take one pie to the fair and one to her friend Max." "Look," Grandpa said, and he showed Beth his forks. "I'm Max, and I'm Jeffrey Bones," I said. "I'm a detective. I solve mysteries." Beth sat up. I said, "I just solved the apple pie mystery." "That's nice," Busy Beth said. I waited. "I solve mysteries," I said, "and I eat apple pie." "Oh," Busy Beth said, and she took her keys, hurried to her car, and brought back a large white box. Max was written on the box. We sat in the kitchen. Busy Beth gave me a plate, a fork, a napkin, and a slice of pie. She gave Grandpa and Sally pie, too. "Ruff, ruff!" She gave Oliver a dog biscuit. She got out the broom and waited. "With crisp crust," she said, "there are lots of crumbs." We all tasted the pie. "First prize," Grandpa said. Grandpa was right. The pie was delicious. Beth was also right. There were lots of crumbs. Busy Beth hurried and swept them up. I was right, too. I knew what had happened to Sally's pie. I had solved the delicious, crumbly apple pie mystery. The end.
I'd love to have a mystery like that.
Yes.
Story times every Thursday at 10:30 at the library, and we do air here every Sunday at 3:30 in the afternoon. And summer reading program is coming up. We'll be ready to pass out reading logs on May 22nd, so be there. Okay, here is "What Did Della Wear?"
What did Della wear, boys? What did Della wear? I ask you now as a personal friend, what did Della wear?
She wore her New Jersey, boys, she wore her New Jersey. I tell you now as a personal friend, she wore her New Jersey.
What did Idaho, boys? What did Idaho? I ask you now as a personal friend, what did Idaho?
She honed her Maryland, boys, she honed her Maryland. I tell you now as a personal friend, she hoed her Maryland.
What did I away, boys? What did I away?
And we thank you as personal friends for joining us.